Friday Night Wine Fight contains coarse language and adult themes. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome to Friday Night Wine Fight.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Bianca.
And I'm Amy. We are three Melbourne girls who had nothing better to do than start a podcast while we're all living la vida lockdown. But now we're free. For now. Yeah, we don't know what tomorrow will bring, but yay! So yay. We celebrate today. So we take aim at one topic each week with a bottle or three of wine and try to make some sense of it. Ladies, what are we drinking?
Well, tonight, even though it's fucking hot, I'm drinking Buller's Fine Musket. It's a long story, but I have to drink this.
Before anybody asks, no, she didn't lose a bet to either of us. Wasn't
yeah.
Us.
No, completely different person.
Oh, nice.
But it is tasty.
It is. Well, actually, I haven't had the fine musket. I've just had the normal musket because I'm a pleb. But, yeah.
Hey, I bought you that musket. God damn it.
It wasn't fancy musket. She's got the fine
musket. No, it wasn't because you got the good gin. So, yeah, I know. You know.
Yeah.
This isn't even that fancy. I don't think. It's won a lot of awards, but it's won a lot of awards. Fuck, I can't talk.
Well, repeat.
Haven't even had a full glass yet. Okay, we're doing well, aren't we, Musket? Yes, yes we are. Fuck. So it's won awards, but yeah, it's not the real fancy stuff. Oh, God. This is what I get for not drinking for, you know, a week.
Oh, I feel you.
You just gotta keep topping up, guys. I keep telling you.
Yeah.
I know, but, like, I couldn't because of all my things, my drugs. So back to drinking now. It's okay, people. A crisis is now averted. Yeah.
We were about to cut you from the show, so.
Yeah, I know.
You were on that ledge and we're like, should we just cut her, get someone that is actually drinking in?
We have to have someone that sounds as stupid as we do, so come on.
Right, right.
So we've got a long list of those two.
Yeah. So on that note,
what are you drinking?
Yeah, I'm drinking. I'm just pouring myself a glass. Noble Fellows Baron Betsy Pinot Gris. And there is this
Baron
lovely picture.
Baron Betsy, you say?
Baron Betsy, yes. Yeah.
Baron Betsy.
She's dressed like a pilgrim.
And she's a cow.
Yeah.
Put that out there.
Yeah.
Literally, yeah. She could really been
anywhere. Yeah. Yeah. You have to check out the blog to see the picture of the bottle. So definitely get over there and have a look. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think females can be barons, but okay.
I don't think cows can be anything along those lines, mate.
Well, yeah.
Well, you never know, actually. I mean,
we had Sir Beaver last week, so.
No, that was huge Beaver.
Oh, God, this is going off the rails so freaking quickly.
I know. Let's get back on.
Let's get back on track. Amy, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a new rosé that I am trying out, which I'm enjoying, and it is called Left Hook First Round Rosé.
Ooh.
Or Rose, as Sarah likes to call it, because she's an ignorant idiot. Yeah.
I don't care.
All right, Bianca, what's our topic for tonight? Let's keep this freight train going.
Okay. Chugga. All right. So our topic tonight is real life Robin Hood. Robin Hood and Little John running through the forest.
Jumping through the Dutch trees trying to get away.
So, look, over the course of the last, I don't know, 700 years, the outlaw, pardon?
Short period of time, yep.
Yeah, it's like,
last week.
Yeah.
No.
The outlaw from Nottinghamshire, who robs from the rich to give to the poor, has emerged as one of the most enduring folk heroes in pop culture and one of the most versatile ever. And according to legend, he was a highly skilled archer and swordsman. In some versions of the legend, he is depicted as being of noble birth, and in modern, can't even fucking talk. Hello.
Yeah, those are words. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yes, in modern retellings. He is sometimes depicted as having fought in the Crusades before returning to England to find his lands taken by the sheriff. In the oldest known versions, he is instead a member of the Yeoman class, traditionally depicted dressed in Lincoln green. He is said to have robbed from the rich and given to the poor. Academics, meanwhile, like I went into a bit of a deep dive to see how much people have actually found out about Robin Hood. So academics have combed the historical records for evidence of a real Robin Hood. English legal records suggest that as early as the 13th century, Robe Hood or Reuben Hood and other variations had become common pseudonyms for criminals. And the first clear reference to rhymes of Robin Hood is from the alliterative poem by Piers Blowman and thought to have been composed in the 1370s. Now, do you ladies want me to read out the prose?
Yeah,
why not?
Okay, so this is an excerpt from that, basically depicting that Robin Hood is waiting in hiding. And he's waiting for a traveller to come down the road, and his intentions is to give him money if that traveller is poor. Turns out he wasn't. It goes, "Of my good he shall hew some, if he be of poor man. Lock ye do no husband harm, that tilleth with his plough, no more ye shall know God ye man. That walketh by Grenwood shore, ne no knight, ne no squire, that will be a good fellow. He was a good outlaw and died poor man mock good." Okay, that sounded a bit jumbled, but this was written.
That's English, right?
In the 13th century.
Maybe if you put on an English accent, it would have made more sense.
And donned a cap with a feather.
And
tights.
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 So apparently that was composed in, this is the rhymes of Robin Hood, composed in the 1370s. That's the way they spoke back then. Sorry about it. By the early 15th century, at the latest, Robin Hood had become associated with May Day celebrations, with revelers dressing as Robin or as members of his band for the festivities. This was not actually common throughout like the whole of England, but just in some of the regions. I don't know which regions, don't ask questions. The custom lasted until Elizabethan times, and during the reign of Henry VIII, it was really popular during, you know, court, going to court and, you know, dressing up. Yeah. There was actually someone, bear with me. I didn't write it down, but I actually do want to segue to it now. Fuck. So a complaint in Gyves and Pauper, which was a newspaper or a leaflet type thing from 1405 to 1410. This person complained saying that people would rather listen to tales and songs of Robin Hood than attend mass. Really?
Yes, because unlike mass, Robin Hood's not putting people to sleep.
Also, they're expected to turn up to mass and hand over money. Robin Hood was just going to fling through town and give them money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, I can see why it was popular.
And there was no judging.
Yeah.
Judging is all fuck. And back then, it was depressing and everyone was going to die.
Yeah.
Well, it really was because, you know, the Black Death and stuff. But anyway.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. So, look, we may never know for sure whether Robin Hood ever actually existed outside of the verses of ballads and the pages of books. And even if we did, fans, young and old, would still surely flock to England's Nottinghamshire region for a tour of the legend's alleged former hangouts, from the centuries-old pubs to the major oak and Sherwood Forest. What we do know is that the notion of a brave rebel who lives on the outskirts of society, fighting injustice and oppression with his band of companions, has universal appeal, whether he's played by Errol Flynn, Russell Crowe, or even, as on a 1979 episode of The Muppet Show, Kermit the Frog.
Oh.
But yeah, ladies, I just want to throw this out to you. Who's your favourite Robin Hood?
Oh, Carrie Yule.
Carrie Yule.
Yeah.
No doubt about that.
How is this a question?
Yeah. Carrie Yule's, come on.
No, Kevin Costner? Come on.
That was amazing. And yeah, love Kevin Costner, but Carrie Yule's, come on. In those tapes? Yeah. Thank you.
When you were saying that people still gather, like, you know, in the pubs and, you know, the major oak and Sherwood Forest, I'm thinking when we go to England, that'll be us. We'll be out front of the biggest fucking tree you can find out in Sherwood Forest going, la, 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 la.
Just out there going, I said, hey, hey. I said, hey,
ho, ho, ho. And then we'll find Bianca up the tree. We'll be like, Blinken, what are you doing up there?
I can see you.
If anyone doesn't know what we are referring to, it is Robin Hood, Men in Tights. It was done by Mel Brooks, and it is a parody, obviously, and it is hilarious. If you haven't seen it, go and freaking watch this movie.
But, Sherbrooke Forest, I don't think is actually really big.
Not Sherbrooke, Sherwood.
Yeah,
sorry, Sherwood.
Sherbrooke, Victoria.
Yeah. Sorry, I get all those confused. Trees and all. Yeah. Ours is actually bigger.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Ours is bigger. Ours is bigger.
I think Sherwood is like 5 acres.
Yeah, it's really small. It used to be bigger, but they built houses. Yeah. My Uncle Barry grew up there.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had an Uncle Bazza.
I do have an Uncle Bazza. Yeah.
Why don't we know Uncle Bazza?
Because he's my uncle once removed and he lives in the Lakes District and we don't really, you know.
It's the same reason, Sarah, that we don't know your uncle, who sounds like Bazza, but with a different letter at the start of his name.
Oh, Uncle Daz.
Oh, well, you said it, I didn't, so.
No, I'll say it.
All right, look, now I'm just going to crack onto my Robin Hood. I chose my Robin Hood as a way to honour one of our, collectively, our favourite listeners. They've been with us since day dot. Frenchy from Clichy, France. You know, you've got to reach out to us at some point. So
don't stay silent, mate. We'll come for you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm literally finding things about where you live now.
Okay, that sounds scary. We're not going to come for you in that way. Just in a friendly way. Friendly.
No, we're definitely friendly. In a scary way.
Don't say me. She talks shit. Friendly
way. Going to pick up Jen in Canada and then we're flying across.
She might say some French. It'll be fine. Jen, do you know any French?
Don't let them pull you into this. Run while you still can.
So my Robin Hood is Jacques René Mazarin, who was born in Clichy, which is near Paris, for those playing at home. And he was born on the 28th of December 1936. That's important. So he was born into a wealthy middle-class family. Mezrine was academically gifted, and his parents had great aspirations for their son and sent him to the prestigious Catholic College de Jolie. And Mezrine was an extremely unruly pupil. Mm-hmm. He was just one of those fucker kids. And same. Yeah, we had plenty of them at our high school. Oh, fuck. He couldn't throw a stick without hitting one. And he was expelled for attacking the principal. And he went on to be expelled from other schools and fell into a lifestyle of juvenile delinquency, much to the dismay of his family. And at age 20, by age 20, he'd already been married and divorced. So, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you mate. I can't feel that. Yeah.
Yeah, with a kid and a kid as well. Yeah. So, yeah, he was drafted into the French army during the Algeria's War of Independence.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah, real heavy. Although he actually really disliked the military discipline, but Mezrine enjoyed the action. And he was decorated with the Cross for Military Valor by General Charles de Gaulle.
Oh, like, wow.
Yeah.
They named an airport after that guy, didn't they?
Yes.
Isn't that the main airport in Paris?
That's the main airport in Paris.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Amy knows things.
Yes.
Look out. Amy knows things.
Yeah, he left the army in 1959, and he was actually 23 when he left the army, for those doing the math. Look, just want to point out here, okay, so I've talked a little bit about how his basically his schoolhood and that he went into the army and he was good at that and stuff, and he hadn't, I don't know, not good at it, that's not a thing, you can't, anyway.
You can be good at killing people, that's a thing.
Well, I'm just going to put it
something. That's what the army was about.
Yeah. When he was a child, so it's, a lot of things say he was actually from a wealthy family, but then I actually deep dived and found he was actually from a blue collar family that became wealthy. So back in 1940, I think it was like 43, so he would have been 9 at the time or something like that. He actually witnessed a great massacre in his village by German soldiers during World War II.
Oh.
That could have contributed to the way that his brain has formed and the way that he thinks and the reasons why that he was actually – he disliked the military discipline, but he actually enjoyed the action because of what he saw when he was a child. I'm surmising. I have no psychology background, but that is probably –
that could fuck a kid up.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably fucked him up.
It was a village massacre. It wasn't like one or two people. So, yeah, that was quite a big deal. And, yes. So, yeah, I'm going to move on from that now. Jacques Mezrine was known for more than a decade as public enemy number one. Mezrine was, in fact, a public hero in France. A romantic Robin Hood figure who predicted his own bloody end at the hands of the police. But he was always a step ahead of his pursuers during a spectacular career of bank robberies, kidnappings, and jailbreaks. Yeah. He was really endeared and really regarded to the, like, intellectual people of the left standing, because he campaigned against inhumane prison conditions. So one of the kidnappings that he did, he tried to kidnap a judge that put him in prison because the maximum security prison was so horrific. And, I mean, he escaped from prison. So the prisons couldn't hold him. Like, he just escaped. It was like... Yeah, it's just amazing. And he tried to kidnap this judge because, yeah, he was just like, the prison system is terrible. We need to get this fixed. How am I going to get this fixed? I'll kidnap a judge. Probs not the right thing to do.
That makes sense.
But, you know, yeah. So he was considered a super crook, and he infuriated the police, and particularly Commissioner Robert Broussard, which Broussard was then, the head of the police flying squad. I don't know what that even is.
Flying squad, it's an English term, and it's like in Scotland Yard and stuff like that. I don't know if they still use it today, but basically they're like the James Bonds.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Police. The super cops.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So he actually gave numerous newspapers interviews and shit.
Of course he did.
Just it's a good prison, blah, blah, blah. And he would totally tell his story. He was quite willing to tell his story. He even found the time to write a best-selling autobiography describing his criminal exploits.
Oh, wow.
and his outrageous love affairs. Because not only did he have, all these robberies and stuff like that, but he had some beautiful women on his arm all the time.
Just love a bad boy.
Yeah. So he actually, had this decade-long feud with Broussard, who was the country's most dedicated cop at the time. We're talking, this is the 60s and 70s. At one stage, Broussard recalled in his memoirs, the pair drank champagne together at the police headquarters after Mesrine was cornered in a top-floor apartment. He dared the police chief to throw down his gun and come in and take him unarmed. It's fucking shit. I love it. Broussard accepted the challenge, and the two men emerged smiling, puffing cigars, and Mesrine's but next time, one of us will end up dead. Oh, my God. It's so amazing.
Oh, my God.
He's in there in a standoff, and then just comes out, and they're both smoking cigars. This is cool. We're cool. We're bros now.
Something out of a movie.
It absolutely is.
I'm expecting Broussard to say something like, good show, Bond. Good show, old man. But you're coming home with me, and we're locking you up. Goodbye.
There is actually a movie. It came out in 2008, and it's a two-part movie, so I'm guessing it's quite long. I haven't looked into it. Actually, I've got the tab open. It's 246 minutes. So part one's 113 minutes, and part two's 133 minutes.
Jeez.
And it's all in French.
That's right.
I'll watch it.
I like subtitles.
Yeah. So it's the countries it's filmed in is France and Canada, and the languages spoken are French, Spanish, and English. So, yes, because it follows his entire life. So it follows him from, just everything. He had a restaurant on the Canary Islands.
As do we all.
Yeah, well, he was given a restaurant from his parents back when he first got out of jail. He was actually going to go on the straight and narrow. He was going to do the right thing. He started running a restaurant, and he was doing really well. And then his friends from his criminal past turned up, and, then it all turned to shit.
God damn it, goddamn stupid cronies.
This is why I keep telling people, don't have friends. They make you do shit, cause crime, start a podcast, go out and socialise.
I mean, Sarah, look, if you get arrested, guaranteed it was not your fault. It is definitely Bianca Rye. Guaranteed.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%, Amy. She's the dodgiest one out of all of us.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Okay.
I'm looking at myself.
And I'm fine.
An angel, Bianca. An angel. It's Amy.
In the mirror. Dodgy.
If we leave the house, I'm fine because I pull my shit together and I'm okay and I'm usually the responsible one. But if we're in my house drinking, well, fuck. We could commit felonies. It's fine.
I do.
Constantly.
Yeah.
You did several felonies in your house.
I'm just going to finish up with the story of his death because it was a bit epic. So, I really wanted to tell you guys about it. So when he said to when Mezzarine said to Broussard, one of us will end up dead, that moment actually came on the 2nd of November 1979. Mezzarine, having broken out of yet another top security prison, was traced. I know. He was. Oh, God. Yeah, I'll say something else at the end of this. He was traced by Broussard's men to a flat in a Paris suburb where he was hiding out with his girlfriend, Sylvie Jean Jacot. I'm trying to get my French right. I'm really fucking up. Driving away from the apartment for a weekend in the country, Mezzarine apparently failed to notice an unmarked lorry tailing him.
Rookie.
Mm. Mm. With the car stopped in traffic, the truck squeezed in front. All of a sudden, the canvas cover was thrown up to reveal four police marksmen who opened fire.
Jesus.
Mezzarine died instantly at the wheel of his car, while Jean Jacot lost an eye and her pet poodle, Fripple.
Aww.
Yep. Fripple was blown to pieces.
Little frou-frou.
Poor little frou-frou. So more than 20 bullets were later retrieved from that BMW.
Far out.
Yeah.
Was it a toy poodle or a standard poodle?
God.
There's a big difference between those dogs.
It's a huge fucking difference
between those two dogs.
So, I just want to know the size of the dog so I can understand the size of the being blown to pieces. Because if it was a toy poodle.
So,
That's my takeaway.
Right. So, I care about people, I care about the dog.
The fact that the police jumped out of a freaking lorry and there was four marksmen who didn't even ask him to get out of the car. They went, well, you're just going to escape from jail anyway, so we're going to fuck your shit up. That doesn't disturb you, and it was only in 1979? That doesn't disturb you?
No, that sounds natural.
Okay. I actually deep dove into this a bit more. Daughter Sabrina, she was 14 at the time of her father's death. She actually opened up an inquiry into his death, saying it was an execution. And from the time of his death till now, it was considered an execution because of the way it was handled. And that was the information that was given to the public. Okay. So what has come out through this inquiry, Mezzarine had three grenades locked, loaded, ready to go, and he actually ducked down as the cover went up. He was going to blow shit up. No one was going to take him alive.
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah, so there were three grenades under his seat. That's what has come out. So she actually has lost the battle with the courts to say that it was an execution. It's hard. I mean, she was only 14 at the time, so to be an adult now, it's.
Mm-hmm. And after so much time, how can you really trust anyone to say, oh, yeah, by the way, there was grenades under the seat?
Well, exactly. It's the most common thing that, you know, they do an inquiry into the death of somebody at the hands of police or army or whatever, and they're like, oh, yeah, and then we found some stuff. Really?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, Broussard actually, he endured years of public, criticism as the man who murdered Mezzarine.
He also would have been a laughingstock while he was alive, too. Like, I mean, this is a police captain who cannot catch a guy. He would have been a laughing stock.
So he...
What are you talking about? He caught him and they had cigars. It was a great time. He caught him. One.
And the thing is, the execution wasn't... Well, the execution, I shouldn't call it that. The
shooting?
Series of
failed events. Apprehension.
Yeah, the failed apprehension. That's better. The other one I'm looking at says the shoot to kill ambush, which isn't much better.
I'm going to die at the hands of Sarah. Shoot to kill ambush.
Accidental shoot to kill ambush.
Failed apprehension, Amy.
So, look, it wasn't even by Broussard. It was by the then president, Valerie Giscard. Valerie Giscard d'Estaing. Yeah, so it was actually the president of the country issued it. So,
so that's a hit.
That's a hit.
Jilted lover.
Oh, big one, Sarah.
Ooh.
Could have been.
Yeah, look. It's really hard to say. Like, yeah, 20 years, 5 different magistrates investigated it, 3 appeals through the French justice system. It's hard. Who knows actually what really went down? Only Mesrine knows. But the thing is, what's her face with Frou Frou? She would know. I mean, she lost an eye, but she didn't lose a brain. One eye. Yeah. Sylvie, one eye. Jean Jacot. Only she would really know. She was the last person alive on his side in that situation. And I have no doubt whether she's actually still alive herself. So, yeah. That's my Robin Hood.
Nice.
Yeah, that's my Robin Hood, people. That's my Robin Hood. Yeah, no little John, sorry. No running through a forest. He might have. I don't know.
He might have.
He was also known as the Man of 1,000 Faces because of how good he was at disguises. Do you want to see what he looks like? Hold on. Copy.
What? Wasn't there a movie with that title?
Nah, it's off Game of Thrones, mate.
Yeah.
No. I'm pretty sure there was a movie.
I've just
that group that Arya is with, Arya, she was with the Men of 1,000 Faces or something like that. The Men of Many Faces, something like that.
I still think I've heard it somewhere else.
Man's got some sideburns on him.
He's got some sideburns, but that is 1973, so it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man's got some sideburns.
Yeah.
Well done, Bianca.
Yeah. I actually really enjoyed it.
My turn. Okay. Huh. So I'm not a history buff like Bianca is. And when this topic was suggested, I was like, I can't think of anything I could do off the top of my head, which is unlike me. Usually I have a rough idea. When the topic is announced, I usually have a rough idea what I'm going to do. For this week, I had to spend considerable amount of time reading through historical figures and figuring out which ones were, in fact, real-life Robin Hoods. So I actually was trying to decide between 2 very notable figures when I stumbled across this little gem. Now, the reason why I discounted these notable figures was because as interesting and as fascinating as these people were, it was all very sad in the end. And so I decided to go the comedy route, and here is my person. So, humble listeners, meet Nezumi Kozo. Now, his full name is Nakamura Jiokuchi, or better known as Nezumi Kozo, Rat Kid. That's his interpretation.
Hey, wasn't he my neighbor growing up?
Probably. Yeah.
Rat Boy? Yes.
Hey, Rat Boy.
Who can forget dear Rat Boy?
He was a Japanese Robin Hood. Now, according to some tales, he got his nickname because of the way he broke into rich homes. How did he break in, you ask? Well, some legends say that he broke into wealthy estates owned often by samurais through the attic, quiet and unnoticed. Like a rat. Other legends say that he always carried a bag full of rats to distract the inhabitants of the home who may be awake at the time of the burglary and stumble upon him.
Oh.
Unleash the rats and then bail. So he only committed burglaries at night. So most of the time people were asleep. I can't imagine carrying around a bag of rats in the middle of the night while you're trying to be like stealthy is a good idea. Because I figured they'd probably make noise, but I don't know.
But if you release them,
and I'd be like, ew, over here. Yeah, now I'm running away. No.
Yeah. No, I figure that's actually a really good way of distracting people.
Because they'll see the rats and then they'll freak out like Bianca just did.
Yeah.
And then they'll fucking run away. And then you're like, okay, so where am I from?
However, these people that own these houses were supposed to be samurais. So I would think if they freaked out, they'd be.
No.
Anyway. Yeah, anyway.
Rats are a completely different story.
We're going too far down a tangent. Okay. So, like a typical superhero, he had two identities. In the day, he was Nakamura. Nakamura Jiokushi, who worked as a part-time volunteer at the local fire brigade. And then at night, he was Nezumi Kozo, who stole from the rich landowners. Yes. He lived during the late 19th century in Edo, which is presently Tokyo, during the Edo period. He was active as Nezumi Kozo for a period of about 15 years. And in that time, he was caught two times. The first time he was caught, he was tattooed and then banished from Edo. The second time, at the age of 36, he confessed to the burglary of almost 100 samurai estates.
Wow.
Yeah. So homeboy gets caught first time, and he gets a free tattoo. Like, I'm in.
Like, that's right, because you can't. Yeah, you only have tattoos if you're like bad and like Yakuza.
Yeah, like Yakuza. Yeah. So he was branded and then sent on his way. Yeah. I'm in because if I tried to commit a burglary, I'm definitely getting caught. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did get turfed out of Tokyo, which was a slight bummer, but never mind. Osaka's more fun, so just live there. It's fine. Yeah. Anyway. So many of these thefts went unreported because it was embarrassing for the samurai to admit the humiliation, and at the same time, it was a great pleasure for the people at the bottom of the hierarchy to see their landlords humiliated. So many times, it just was unreported. According to folk stories, Rat Kid gave his money to the poor, while historians suggest that he lavished his money on women and gambling. Cocaine and hookers, people. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it was. However, the fact that he died alone, serving his wives, and that's plural, with divorce papers just prior to his arrest in order to protect them from sharing in the punishment, because that was the law at the time. Yeah, so if your husband or partner got picked up for doing something, you could get punished too.
That was nice of him.
Yeah, well, this further enhanced his stature in the community.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll divorce my wives so they don't get punished.
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
bro points.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. And he was a volunteer firefighter. And, yeah, there's lots to like about this guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I tried to find out where he died, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So feel free to speculate wildly. I don't mind. But I think that this is a little bit more of an urban legend opposed to an actual person, but the actual person did exist. How much of his folk tale is true, we don't know.
Yeah.
But I have put a picture up in the blog of this guy, and I just love – actually, I didn't put it in the blog yet. I just absolutely love – the depiction of this guy, and I'll just see if I can find it. Have a look at this picture.
Is it in the blog or on the
it's on the photo sheet.
Wait. Loading. Oh, it's a cartoon. Oh, look at him.
Oh, creepy.
I can't. My thing's not loading fast enough.
Anyway, the pictures of him are just sort of creepy as fuck as he's wandering around, like, stealing from these samurais. It's actually quite interesting. I will put this in the blog. But, yeah, that is my Robin Hood.
Yeah. I like it. What have you got, Sarah?
So, again, I always wait till the last day to do mine. So, the reason why I'm drinking my Bulla Musket is because it kind of shares the same name as this guy. Bulla Felix.
Bulla. I Bulla feel it sometimes, yeah.
I was just about to say that. I Bulla feel it too.
Hey, high five.
Are you people clapping?
Turns out if I high five myself, it's clacking. I don't want to do that anymore.
I just did. It's fine. Sarah, okay.
Sorry.
Not sorry. Fucking high-fiving yourself. Fucking clapping people. All right. No. Don't distract me. I'm easily distracted.
No. Really?
Sarah? Distracted?
Hold the phone.
Have another glass of wine. Okay. So, Bulla Felix could have been one of the first Robin Hoods before Robin Hood was Robin Hood.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm down.
Yeah. So, he was from ancient Rome. Oh. So, yeah. So, the most significant historical source for the tale of Bulla Felix was actually written by a Roman senator and historian of ancient Rome, funnily enough, Cassius Dio. I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah. I've heard of him. Yeah.
I hear you laughing, Amy. And seriously, I'm sitting there going, okay, so the guy's like 3rd century and he's writing about ancient Rome. Is it ancient Rome to him? No, it's just current events. What would ancient Rome be to him? A forest? Not a fucking Rome. Rome wasn't really built. No, ancient
Rome wasn't built in the day. We know that. Yeah. There's songs
and about. All the roads lead there.
And so. All the roads lead there.
And the aqueducts. No one's written a song about those. Anyway.
No. Aqueduct? Thank you, Romans, for the aqueducts. They're quack, very quack. Handy. So, anyway, this guy, Cassius, he published 80 volumes of history on ancient Rome during the 3rd century.
Or current events, we don't know.
Or current events, as it probably was at the time.
It was basically like, yeah. Can't even.
It's just
keep going.
So he goes, Sarah, I can't. So this guy spoke of Bulla as an actual figure who used to roam around the empire at the beginning of the third.
He roamed in Rome.
When in Rome, that's he
meant
Rome.
To do. Yeah. What else you meant to do while in Rome? So
brush up on current events? I don't know.
I'm sorry, I'm gonna shut up. No, I need another drink. This is gonna take forever. It's not even that long. Sorry, you're gonna have to edit all this shit out. Okay. So yeah. So he roamed around the empire at the beginning of the 3rd century, but again, Cassius could have been taking some form of creative license.
Yeah.
So Bulla was allegedly the leader of a group of bandits consisting of 600 men, which included runaway slaves, imperial freedmen, and petty criminals. Now, these guys were bandits. And they did engage in highway robbery, but through all their escapades, they never killed their victims. They merely stripped them of their wealth and distributed it amongst themselves and, of course, the poor people. And I'm guessing it was probably like a 70-40% ratio. We'll keep the 70. You guys can have the 40. We need to feed ourselves.
70-40, Sarah?
Yeah.
Do you do the math?
Shut up! I was doing it at work where I have to do
totally hard.
She's putting in 110%, okay?
So putting in 110%. Stop! I need to pee if you keep making me laugh. Oh, it's gonna end badly. Anyway, oh fuck. Now I've lost my spot. Don't make me laugh. Okay. And breathe. Fuck off. So the bandits also created a network of spies. Hello, the very first MI7.
Ooh.
This is my theory anyway. Who provided them with the schedules for ships that were preparing to leave from the southern Italian ports. So he could coordinate his men and they would intercept the ships and steal as much as they could without killing or, you know, doing unnecessary slaughtering of the merchants and sailors.
Okay.
So he seems to be a fairly, you know, nice guy. Yeah, I just want to steal your shit. I don't want to kill you. I'll just steal your shit.
Yeah.
So this group operated during the reign of Emperor, and I'm going to get this wrong because I'm terrible at pronouncing names, Septimius Severus.
Ooh, well done.
Who allegedly proclaimed, blah, 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 see, fuck, can't even talk.
Hey, Vlad! Vlad was there.
Yeah, Vlad was there. He liked
Septimius Severus, who allegedly proclaimed Expelliarmus.
No, he proclaimed Bulla Felix as his personal nemesis.
Ooh.
Now, Severus was a successful warrior whose legions won several important battles in Britain, and then he moved there and became a wizard. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. But he was really incapable of stopping Felix's men who were terrorizing his homeland.
You can only call stupefy at so many people at once. Come on.
Yeah. And Expelliarmus really doesn't work unless the other guy's holding a wand, so.
And you really probably, he probably should have done his, Expectus Patronum charm, but, yeah, maybe got distracted.
Expecto.
Whatever. My kid's only up to the second one, okay? It's a long time since I've seen the other ones.
I watch them regularly. So the story that Cassius Duo argued was that Bulla successfully eluded capture because he was a master of disguise and deception. AKA, he would walk slowly through crowds, sit on benches with his head down, or hide in haystacks. AKA Assassin's Creed, this is what's going through my head when I was reading it. But no, in reality, he dressed up as a magistrate or as a Roman centurion.
Okay.
And then he would convince the noblemen at the time that he was actually there to protect them. And then he would rob them.
Ooh, sneaky.
Yeah. So
yeah, just
rob them.
Yeah. This is why he was so good at pretending to be a Death Eater when he was actually one of the good guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. No.
He had lots of practice. Oh, I've lost track.
We're now talking about Bulla. He was the one that. Yeah. Not Severus. Bulla. He's the one with the disguises. So after he robbed the people, his associates would help hide him in safe houses that they've set up.
Okay.
That way he could elude capture. So he managed to escape from the authorities for 2 years when he was captured in 207 AD when someone had actually seen through one of his masterful disguises. I'm thinking
I saw through the invisibility cloak. Oh, no.
That's, again, Severus, not Bulla. Fuck, people. Keep up. Bulla is not the wizard. He's the one in the fake mustache, the funny glasses with the big eyebrow. This Robin Hood of ancient Rome had a sad ending after he was captured. So when he was discovered, he was then sentenced to death.
Severus was like Avada Kedavra and he was dead. Got it.
No. Oh. No. Even worse. So the way they executed him was horrific. He was actually torn apart by wild beasts in the center of the Roman Colosseum while his former victims laughed and mocked him in his final moments.
Oh, that's horrific.
Yeah.
This is why my guy was petitioning for better prison systems. This shit's fucked.
Bianca, this is the reason why wizards are not allowed to run things anymore, okay? They're brutal.
Yeah.
This is why Romans were considered to be quite fucking crazy at the time. Yeah. So that's my man.
Can I just drop a little tidbit in there? Don't you think it's funny when you talk about Robin Hood? So he robbed from the rich and gave to the poor. Robin Hood, like he's Robin in my hood.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I think it's come from. Anyway, that's just my little tidbit that I came up with when
back
I was going
through. 700 years ago.
And I was going through wizard things, and I don't know as many Harry Potter references as Bianca, so yeah. Anyway, I had so much fun researching this topic, as I did with all the other topics over the last few weeks. However, we would love some topic suggestions from our listeners. We have had a few really, really good ones. Shout out to Jen. And a shout out to the Insanely Dangerous Retro Pod Show. If you have any topics you would like us to discuss, hit us up. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. We are on Tumblr. Otherwise, you can email us at FridayNightWineFight@gmail.com. To everyone who has listened to this, we would like to thank each and every one of you for your time in listening to our utter rubbish mispronunciation of all Harry Potter references, particularly the spells. Anyway, we hope that you have found it entertaining and not using any of the facts discussed in this recording to make important decisions in your lives. Unless, of course, it's in relation to the purchase and use of a protection chainsaw. Peace out, guys.
Bye.